Welcome, and you're listening to the Geekologist Radio, a division of the Queued Up Media Group, and meow.
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Chris Meow, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue and into our meow gaming system, and ride the hype train from the past into the future, meow. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, we have Mr. Nash, meow.
Are you meowing at me? You getting willy-nilly with me, son?
You'd think that Super Troopers just went gold.
Well, no, Super Troopers 2 just finished filming.
Super Troopers 2, yeah, I know, Hell's that's what bells, I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Good things coming. How about you, Fouts? What's going on, man?
Oh, it's been a long week and a bad week, but now it's a really good week, but we can't talk about it yet. So, yeah, that's about me. Cajun?
Cuban. Lost Fouts Cuban. In Vegas. So the two Vegas guys, Damien and Brandon, both can't make it. I'm the sole member of the podcast going, but I'll weigh from there. I'll send a picture, but I'll miss you guys, man. Hoping you're all going to be
Make sure you get lost on the strip for us.
Yep. I'll definitely get lost on the strip. I'll drink lots of VD's Pappy Van Winkle for you guys and tell you all about it.
Listen, when you send those pics from Vegas, I don't want to see your Pappy Van Winkle.
You want to see his VD though, right?
Oh, look, you're going to get the full bottle picture and the empty bottle.
The full Van Winkle. Last week's episode, we had Tinks on, and which was an awesome episode. We were so thankful that she came on to the podcast, and we changed up kind of the order in which we do things, and we'll do that from time to time when we have a guest on, but we're going to get back into the swing, and we're going to get into our queue.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and
Taboo episode 6. What do you guys think of Taboo episode 6, gentlemen?
I was confused. I thought it was the season finale because it was an hour and a half long, but I am so glad it was an hour and a half long because I thought it was outstanding.
Oh yeah.
It really was. This show, man, I'm telling you, the characters and stuff in it, and you know, we get to see we understand more about Tom Hardy's character. In this one, we learn a lot more about his past and how effed up it is.
And the sister. Oh, the sister. We saw some.
Dude, she is so screwed up in the head.
Oh, God.
She really is.
She went from emotionless, like nothing was going on in her head, her eyes. It was emotionless to all emotion, 100% emotion from before she did the crazy act in that episode to after she did that crazy act. And it was just. Oof, that was tense, and he was like, oh, God, what did I get myself into? In more ways than one.
Yeah, and see, this is where I was actually, why I was being a little quiet, I was trying to be a little standoffish on, but yeah, so this is where the show goes into and shows the reason why. One, it's taboo, and yeah, in the case it's not.
Yeah, very taboo, yeah.
But, the thing is, do we think that this is actually what the sister was like prior to him leaving? Like, do you think that she was kind of all out there and weird as well? Or, I guess, in comparison, is that why they're drawn to each other?
I think that she was very passionate with him before he left. And this husband that she had just really kind of started whipped her into shape, like beat her into shape. I mean, he physically did it last episode in more ways than one. And so it really pushed her into this society good wife role. And she finally realized that that wasn't what she was, I think, at the end. And pulled away from that.
It's trying to think, though. You're seeing all this stuff and all these pieces being moved around. And in fact, that's actually what the East India Trading Company says is they start calling up the people as chess pieces, and they make it into, you know, it's game on for them. But what I find interesting is that there's so much story, and we were two episodes away from the season from the season finale, it's like, it blows my mind to think how long, like, I would like to know what Ridley Scott is thinking on how long he sees this possibly going on for. Mainly also just to know, because this is period pieces are expensive. Cajun?
Yeah, and also Tom Hardy is not going to stick around for 5 seasons, most likely. Most likely he's not sticking around for many, many seasons. So, yeah, how long do you have him?
They're not going to be able to, they won't be able to afford him for that long of a time.
No, because I mean, and then also this series has kind of garnered some interesting fan videos that have come up. I'm just going to throw this out there. It's in the middle of this is the fact that there is a fan video that put up of compiling all the grunts thus far of Tom Hardy into like one mega cut, and it's epic.
Yeah, he speaks with his eyes and his grunts. He doesn't have to say many words, but
the thing is, it works. It makes perfect sense. Like, I mean, what actor can do? We actually talk about that. Can go through and see, you know, can do that. They can actually, through the intensity of their eyes, and through just grunts, can get a point across. Like he's like, I understand completely. You know, you're just.
So you're telling me he's the reincarnation of Tim the Toolman Taylor?
That is a good analogy.
He could be Tim Allen's son. That's a possibility.
Actually, since this takes place back in the past, Tim Allen could be the great grandson of Tom Allen's character.
Yes, it's all starting to make sense now.
Together, we have solved the mystery.
Right,
and
here.
We also know why he fumbles up so much. It's because he's inbred. So there we go. Okay.
You had to go there. All right.
Sorry.
Okay, can we move on, please?
Some things that he's doing is he got his allies together, but it's now he's almost pushing them away. And he seems like he's intimidating the ones that he felt that I think we felt as fans were the closest ones to them. He pushing them away left and right, where I think they could be losing motivation to be on his side. And he's making the turn that instead of just paying people and convincing them that they're on his side, that he's going to intimidate with fear and corpses with body parts cut out of them. And this is what you do when you cross me. So he's going to be the quintessential like TV show movie villain, but the hero or the anti-hero in this one moving forward.
When he cut out the guy's heart, oh my gosh, that was insane.
Yeah. It's like, just, yeah, put this somewhere and this is yours. And it's like
bury the body in a shallow grave and do whatever you want with the heart.
Here, I gave you a gift.
What?
It's a heart. Yeah. Now, okay. At who did he kill Winter at the end?
That was, when that came up, I'm like, oh my God. Like, and then it went,
I don't think it was him. I think it was the East India Trading Company.
It could be. And then, you know, because he had a bottle and then he could have been passed out. And then they saw the opportunity to make it to strike.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's also that flash scene where he sort of flashed and saw like the mom's witchcraft face right before that, too. So there's a lot of possibilities in that moment. And if he did, what road does that take him down? Does he go on this guilt trip ridden path? If he thinks he did, does he go down this guilt ridden path and tone down the aggressiveness that he's been presenting the whole show? That's going to be a major turning point, I think, is the fallout from that. Because I was actually contemplating if she was a real person, because she was always appear everywhere. Yeah. Like when he was alone and he was it's like, so I was
Damien and I had that same conversation off screen and whatnot. We're like, okay, so do you think she's real or do you think she's just a ghost that he's seeing all the time? And I wasn't even sure until this last two episodes, really, when she was more interactive around other people and things.
Exactly. When other people were noticing her, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see where that's coming from, because they almost would have did a Cajun faux pas there. Oh, and I'd have been mad and throwing things.
Speaking of Cajun faux pas, Cajun was wrong about the mother dying and drowning and then Tom Hardy coming to life.
I'll say that is still a strong possibility. It's still a possibility. I'll remove strong from it. It's still a possibility, but they revealed a lot more that did say that I was most likely wrong. Yeah, that it was more. It was more in the baby sense.
Hashtag Cajun is clinging.
You mean Cuban?
Yeah, Cuban is clinging.
Cuban is clinging to what little bit he has there. Yep, that the opening sequence could definitely be something different, and it was that baby scene, but he's projecting it as an adult. Yep.
Perhaps you could say you were close, but no cigar.
Cigar. Oh,
ooh, a Cuban cigar.
The Cuban. There she is.
Yes.
Can we talk about a Marvel show that is finally grasping me? I love Legion. Like, this is what I wanted anything else on Netflix to be right now, because the story is so compelling and it has me wrapped in, and it doesn't have to do with all of the superpowers and all that other crap. It's just really good storytelling. What are you guys' thoughts on episode 2 of Legion?
The first episode, I was really confused, but after watching the second episode, I am all in. The second episode was so much better.
Oh, dang it. I'm going to have to watch the second episode. I completely gave up on the show after the first one. All right. Dang it.
Really? No, it's honestly, it's really
like,
good.
From your point of view, you will like it. Even like the second episode is a thousand times better.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Last week? I got bombarded by the fact that they didn't talk about a certain person who happens to be his dad. In this episode, they on purpose blank out the face for this huge reveal that they're going to do during this season, right? As he's telling the story, and it's like, okay, well, they're not showing his face. They're not showing his face. I'm like, come on. We all know who this guy is. I'm not going to say it because I got lambasted last week, but we all know.
You're waiting. Just do it, and I could
but
say
here's the thing.
I was hoping
for it.
It's there's really big innuendos with it.
Because
he talks about his father being an astronomer, and then he goes back. He goes, yeah, and he's talking about the stars talk to me. Well, without saying who it is, it's like you think about what is that big machine he goes into, and then they show in the past movies and everything else and any other thing.
Mm-hmm.
The light sources, the stuff is all the living entities that individual's connected to would appear to be stars. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Brandon.
The other thing you got to think of is you do not see his father stand up.
Nope.
He is in a chair the entire time. The only bad thing is the father actually has hair. So you got to try and figure out what time frame this all happened.
Exactly.
Well, this
exactly.
Literally could be any, depending on the universe. One universe has hair for a very long time. The other, he does not.
The best part about this show is that it can take you on different trips because it's based in the mind a lot. And so it can kind of go in any direction. And so even if this goes seasons on, you can kind of go different routes. So you can have different storylines for this. And it doesn't have to be just the basis or the origin story, you know, of the dad and all that other stuff. So I can see this going on for a few years. And FX is the type that if this even gets kind of semi a crowd, you know what I mean? They'll let it roll for a bit because they can afford to.
Exactly.
Right.
So moving on to the Santa Clarita Diet. I know this is not a Cajun favorite.
This is another one. One episode, and I was like, "Oh, that was terrible." I'm gonna go over here and take. I took it off my list right after we were done.
Oh, dang!
Yeah, that was terrible. Go on.
The wife and I watched the first two episodes together, and she's like, "Screw this! This sucks."
Mm-hmm.
I stuck it out. I watched all the episodes. I finished the season. It gets a lot better. You need to finish it, Cuban.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The first episode, my wife's like, "What the hell is this?" And so she was out. And I went through the first three that night, and I'm through episode 8 now, just kind of catching up on things. And it really does get a lot better. It's still kind of hokey. Like, the show is hokey in general, but I think if you enjoy the hokiness, like, if you can kind of just look past that part and just really kind of enjoy the actors themselves, then it's not so bad.
See, that's exactly one of the things is I love the actors and how everything goes into play. And it's just, I talked about it last week. It's the fact of just the guest stars that they have in this show are phenomenal. It's like, for Nathan Fillion, okay?
Nathan Fillion and is good.
He is. There's some stuff I could talk about on that, but we'll have to see in Hype Train if I can speak a little bit on Nathan Fillion, possibly. But the other thing is about this is just, they're kind of going the route of Deadpool with their social media marketing and stuff, and I'm loving it. They have on Facebook, they did it go like they were streaming like Facebook Live, and they're sitting there talking about all these different Netflix original shows, and they're talking about, oh, I wonder what he would taste like, and it's just it's really, really funny and really catchy. And I'm really enjoying seeing all of this stuff kind of culminate together.
I think this is a great spot for Drew Barrymore. I think Netflix is a nice area for her now at this stage in her career, just because I don't think mainstream movies, the whole Adam Sandler thing is done. You know what I mean? So the romantic comedies that she once was a part of and was really popular, nah.
So right. You just said Adam Sandler. We know that Adam Sandler still has two films to go with his contract with Netflix. Do we think that, being the fact that Drew Barrymore is friends with Adam Sandler, do we think that that had anything to do with her coming on as being the lead in the Santa Clarita Diet?
It would really depend on when the show got into production. If the show was trying to sell this pilot to anybody and they already had to film the pilot and Netflix was the one who bought it, then yeah, Adam Sandler had nothing to do with it. If like Netflix funded this show from the start, and Adam Sandler was the one to help push it, then maybe. But yeah,
Sandler's Netflix.
As of this point, I doubt it. I think it would be more the other way. I think this would probably be a pilot that they were shopping around that Netflix bought.
I think I agree with Cajun. The Sandy Wexler trailer just popped for Sandler earlier today on the new Netflix series that he has, and it actually looks pretty good. I mean, the funny part about it was is having all the comedians and all the people because he was an agent, so having all these people talk about him, like real people in real life talking about a character, you know, that he's playing is really, really cool.
Nice. I'm getting into a show right now on Netflix that I heard a lot of buzz about. A lot of my friends that watched it liked it, but finally getting into The Get Down. And any of y'all guys had a chance to watch it when it was around?
I have not.
Okay, so a little bit about The Get Down. The Get Down is Baz Luhrmann, director of this series and creator. Baz Luhrmann did The Great Gatsby. He did Moulin Rouge. So this is The Bronx, 1977. It has a little bit of a musical feel, but it uses both disco, as disco was coming to an end, and hip-hop, as hip-hop was coming up in this setting of, like, dilapidated Bronx. And these are long episodes, like hour and a half to hour long episodes, musical scenes involved in it. The set pieces are very similar, but it was extremely well acted so far, extremely well done. Has some gangster violence in it as well, because it's not all musical. They use it in scenes here and there, but they'll break into a song here and there, but a couple times in an episode. But for the most part, it's the gangster violence, it's the kids growing up with the restrictive parents, trying to find their place in society. Well, well done. I am so hooked into this one. I'm going to have to finish it up, but their episodes are so dang long. I really don't even know how many episodes it is, because I thought it was just going to be a movie. And I was like, wait, there's more? It's been good so far.
So you're saying they're kind of like it's like a longer version of a season of Sherlock?
Right, exactly, yeah. And they're not consistent. Like episode one is like a little over an hour and a half long, I think. And then other episodes are like an hour long. So it's inconsistent. They basically, each one tells a different part of the story. And they're going to take whatever time they need to get a part of it. And this cast is all over the place. Like one of the main guys in the group was also the lead in the movie Dope, which he was fantastic in. One of the villains just got cast as the villain in the Aquaman movie. So Mordon, he just got casted in that, in the new Aquaman movie. And he played a great disco villain, if you want to call it that. if you see the show, you understand what a disco villain is, and this guy's a disco villain, and he is freaking fantastic as it. It's excellent. But I'll stop on that one because that's an older show. Somebody's been watching Autopsy of Jane Doe, Mr. Damian Nash.
Okay, so Autopsy of Jane Doe, it was one of those films that you could get on demand the day that it came out or see it in theater. Now, I would have loved to have seen this in theater. It actually was... So it was done on a low budget, but you couldn't tell it. The practical effects are outstanding. And the actress that plays Jane Doe, I mean, her role was lay on a slab naked and get cut open. And they'll do the makeup and stuff like that. But you never would have thought that somebody just laying on a table could turn out to be such a creepy villain. And the story, actually, it starts off, you hear all these little quirks and stuff, or these little ideas and theories where they found her. Everything puts to the north, and it winds up, it's an autopsy based film, but it actually is a witch story, and it is just excellently created as it plays out through the movie. It is a thriller. There are some jump scares, but my wife never watches movies twice. She watched this movie 4 times in 2 days.
Oh, wow.
She re-rented it because she liked it that much.
And so, this is pretty strong in the horror. More horror, more thriller, what would you say?
It's both. It is a horror thriller. It's definitely going to be a series. It's got 85% score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like, which is pretty strong for a horror movie. It's tough to get that with a horror movie.
Exactly. And, I mean, the actors that they had in it were great. There's a lot to talk about, but we'll hold that over. Eventually, Nerdentials and I, Jeff from Nerdentials and I are going to get together. We're going to do like a mini, excuse me, we're going to do a mini show, minisode, and talk just all things horror, and we'll go into deeper detail on that. But if you're a fan of horror movies and just a fan of just thrillers in general, you should give the show a look-see. Autopsy of Jane Doe, by far great.
Now we need to move on to Walking Dead.
Yes!
Yeah!
The Rock in the Road. Did we expect any of the other people him to talk to say yes? I did. I expected at least somebody to say yes.
Oh, you're talking about somebody saying yes to, like, join in? I didn't think anybody was going to join in. Come on, Rick is such a badass, and every time he walks into a room, it's a pissing contest. He always walks in like, well, you should know me, I'm Rick. And then people are just like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I didn't expect King to say yes. He didn't say no. He just said, let me think about it. And then he said, and at that point, Rick was like, we're out of here.
I expect them to either oust the guy at the hilltop or the king to say yes. I expect it to get some forward momentum into the group. Instead, it's just the same ones that are going to have to run back, or not anymore because of the extended part of the episode, Damien.
So how about that? When they walk in, watching Rick's face and then the rest of the crew, when they walk in, they're all looking and it's like, oh, yeah. Morgan's like, I should have told you. They're like, Tiger? He's like, yeah, you should have said something. Just, that was perfect.
He's so bad about talking about Tiger. He doesn't tell anybody about the Tiger.
it reminds me of not talking about the elephant in the room. Like, let's not talk about the Tiger. Let's not talk about the elephant in the room.
It's a giant elephant in the room. It's a giant jungle creature in the room.
I will
talk about it.
Give Rick credit. He did not do a Carol and totally mock King Ezekiel when he had the tiger. He referred to him as King. He was, you know, asking if he could help out. And the rest of the crew didn't mock King Ezekiel on any of that either, which I've kind of expected at least to hear a comment or something. You know what I mean?
Facial expressions were where this all played out.
They were standing so far in the back of the theater when they first got in. They're like, I'm not going anywhere near that. Is that safe over there? Are we okay? But I think they all knew what they were there for. They were all there to get those soldiers who were doing drills in the front wearing body armor to join their cause. So they're like, oh, these people are legit. We need these guys on our side. And they knew what they were there for and didn't want to threaten that in any way. And if this dude's all about theatrics, he's got a squire next to him with a double-bladed axe cutting jokes, then we're going to play along.
Jesus said to that dude, he said, you're going to like what he has to say, you know? And he had a feeling that things were going to go maybe in their direction. And so I think even Jesus was caught off guard when Morgan decides to be a jackass and was like, well, you know, I don't know if we should, but you know, I'm like, come on, Morgan, I don't know. Morgan's always like that, but I thought for a change that he might switch it up and defend Rick after he lied. I mean, remember, he lied and said he killed somebody, which he did not. That wasn't the truth. He did not. That was not the truth.
Okay.
He lied to Rick in order to try to make himself appear to Rick as if he was stronger than he really was. And he did not kill a person. So I think that speaks to where Morgan is at. Like I think he feels like he needs to be somebody that he isn't, and he's trying to play both sides. Another awesome was to see Carol just being Carol, always a badass. She comes out with that gun and she's like, what are you doing here?
And scares a kid. Just like, she's in the woods, there's a kid, make sure you're scared. You don't even get cookies. Go.
Yeah, listen, this time, if you're a kid, stay the hell away from Carol. It does not end well for you.
It does not. No, things go bad, real bad.
Now, I mean, even for her own daughter, I mean, it's just, oof. but here's the other thing is, this episode gave us something that no other episode has given. It was like one of the best moments in this series was when they get inside the cars and they have the cable and they got Michonne and Rick and they just go cut straight through that herd. I was just like, oh my God, I'm watching with my son and we're both just sitting there like going, that is awesome. Then we're at the same time, we're like looking at the bodies. We're thinking it got so bad that we started trying to do the math of, okay, if those bodies are rotten, that's the only way you're able to cut through that much. Otherwise it would have weighed down the cable.
Sure.
But still we're like, oh my gosh, that I loved. And then if you watch Talking Dead afterwards, that was Chris Hardwick's exact same reaction, was like that scene.
The thing that I took from that and Hardwick talked about was Michonne and Rick finally being on the same page for the first time in at least three or four episodes. The story arc had been pushing them away from each other, and they were trying to draw each other back, and this allowed them, even with eye contact while they were moving the cars, she looked at him, he looked at her. The cars, you know, they had to be on the same page on this in order for this to work. And so you can see them as a team again, which I think was really, really good.
Yeah, and I didn't see that before. That's a good point. I didn't realize that had deeper meaning. I was the engineer talking about the physics. I'm like, how are Norvum hanging on there? Why is it not dragging? That cable wouldn't be so. I was doing all the physics stuff in my head. It's a show about zombies. I need to kind of to let that go. Suspend actual physics for a bit and just like accept it's a cool damn looking scene, let it happen, enjoy it, and or even on that side look even deeper to the meaning of them doing something together. So
did we talk about the fact that the cans were taken, all the food was taken, and they have no idea where he went?
Yeah, that when I saw that happen at first I thought, okay, he must be going out to try to find the guys. You know, he's trying to hide stuff so that people can't take things. But then it's just like, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to try to think. I go back in to start thinking about the comics and stuff. I'm like, okay, has he outlived his part? Or are they trying to hide him for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I start thinking about what are the writers doing with this? Where's this going to go? And because, I mean, his character has started to become kind of, I mean, think about the grave digging thing. And it's like, he's become a good essential part of the team. So for him to do this, it seems like it's counter to the character that he's become. Right. So it's like, I mean, do we think he's starting to go back, or is there more to this?
Yeah, I think there's a scene that we're missing that they might show in flashbacks of him having a conversation with the guy that was outside who was in the car at the beginning. Like when you see him leave, you see that head pop up in the car. Mm-hmm. Like that. Originally, I thought that guy stowed away in the car unbeknownst to Father Gabriel, but now knowing what he wrote in the book about them going to the boat, mm-hmm. that he most likely knew that guy was going to be in the car, and he was taking those supplies to those people, and he was the one doing that for the group. So I still think he's on their side. What was his reasoning? Why was he convinced to do this? I don't know. But Rick's smile when he got surrounded was like, that was awesome. He's like, yeah, we're going to get out of this some way, and you people are going to help us kill some things. So yeah, Rick saw the end game there big time.
The whole that was awesome.
The story arc for me in this episode was just plot moving. Like, to me, this was a plot moving episode. I didn't gain a ton of information aside from the group was back together again. They were trying to get people so they could get an army or get guns to go against Negan. And for an hour and 15 minutes, it was very slow trudging to move the plot along for the next episode to be one of those action episodes. Because there's always in The Walking Dead a plot mover, then there's a backstory episode, then there's an action episode. So I'm hoping that the next episode is the Negan episode that brings him back. I know, Cajun, you were talking about that you had a theory about why Negan wasn't in this episode.
Yeah, I think it's a compensation reason outside of it. They probably pay Jeffrey Dean Morgan by the episode, so anytime that they don't need to show him in an episode, they're just like, just cut him out altogether. We can save paying this dude an episode. But that's just a humorous little theory, because when he's not an episode, he is not in it. But when he's in it, he is balls to the wall in that episode.
Yep.
Eating up screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So technically he wasn't absent from it, because his voice is heard over the radio talking about Fat Joe.
Fat Joe, yeah. Yeah, that's true. He was not absent. Very good point, sir.
But again, Norman Reedus being very on the outskirts of the show, you can see where they're scooting him slowly. He's not in very many episodes where he's either the main act in this. He's more on the outside. So him staying with them, and when the crew comes in to try to find out where he's at, and they're looking through everything, and they don't see that he's there. But if he's there 2 months from now, 2 years from now, 10 years from now, somebody's going down for it. So it was a wise choice on Rick's part to say, you know what, it's in your best interest to just stay here for right now.
But did everybody catch the end sequence? Like the preview for the next episode?
No, I didn't see it.
There's like a super spiked out walker in like a fighting pit.
Oh yeah, I saw that, and instantly what I started going to is I'm like, okay, this reminds me of Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome.
It looked just like a Mad Max freak in that pit, but it was a walker. I was like, this is definitely an homage to Mad Max. All right. Just wanted to hit that on there. Ready to get our game on, gentlemen?
Let's get game on.
All right. For our first topic in Game On, I finally got to play a little For Honor beta. I was about excited about it as everybody else was after I was done.
It's a great concept. The game is a really cool concept. The thing is there's so much coming out that I don't know where it fits for me. There's just too much stuff. It's the same thing with Ghost Recon. There's just too much stuff.
See, for me, like, I love the concept of the game. I love like hack and slash third person fighting games, and I really thought this was going to be that. This combat system is so complex and deep that it's great for your hand to hand combat players, your Street Fighter, highly competitive players, your Killer Instinct, Mortal Kombat. Those players, this game has a lot for them. But for me, it was like this was so convoluted of fighting combat, I was getting lost. Like, and I do not want to put that level of time in to get good. Damien?
So our friend Bass_50, he's been playing this game a lot. And I told him in his sub chat, I was like, okay, I'm telling you, man, I don't want this game, but you make me want it. Because seeing him, he's been playing with Angry Joe and a few others, and watching them play it, it's awesome. It is outstanding. It's like they're communicating. They're talking. Angry Joe's getting on there going, hey, guys, I know we're playing Push to Talk, but, you know, because we're talking to other communities, but we need to communicate a little bit more in here. And then what they're doing is they're going in and practicing against each other on their streams. This is good for Ubisoft. This is what Ubisoft wanted, is they wanted something that they could market to the esports team. Now, they got all these big-time streamers and YouTubers that are actually jumping on it, and these are the guys that are going to create it. These are the guys that are going to make the leagues and are going to do all the work. And then I see, you know, maybe 3-6 months down the line, this becoming a real thing. Like this becoming an esports title, much like Rainbow Six has become. I mean, go, Chris.
2 points to that. One, I agree with Cajun. This is a game where muscle memory, while you're playing the game, if you leave a game like this and come back and you haven't played it consistently, you're going to forget what buttons you're supposed to be pressing in order to be doing all the maneuvers. It's really complicated as far as trying to remember all of the maneuvers. And two, as far as the esports thing, this is a perfect time to come into this because Destiny is in a lull right now, because the Division is over a year old. This is a perfect time for a game to come in and to grab YouTubers because they're looking for something else to play. And right now, this fits the bill. Siege, this game, you know, even Wildlands is something right now that you can play and talk and be able to talk while you're playing.
Yeah, and I think this does have, for your esports community, your Twitch community, stuff like that, because it's taking off there, you will still get people that go into it. But for somebody, and I'm speaking specifically like myself here, is that skill gap being so big? Like I was just looking at it, like you have to know dodges, parries, guard breaks, counters, light attacks, heavy attacks, attack chains, infinite chains, recoveries, cancels, unblockable attacks, undodgeable attacks, stuns, throws, executions, revives, revenge mode, bleeding attacks.
Shit,
for
this is
one
the
character.
This is
for
the Witcher.
One character. There's
exactly
12 characters. So if you change characters, you change roles, you have to learn all those timings and distances again for another character. So that skill gap, just it stretches even more because once you perfect it on one character, you're either stuck with that character and you can't change, or if your role needs to change, you can't do it either. Or you can, but there's minutia between the characters that you need to change it a little bit more. And like that's, for me, that was information overload, and I was like, I'm out of here. And
the average player that thought that this was something they could pick up and they're going to be able to play does get lost in it. However, it is something that one thing that they need to look out for, though, is a lot of these maneuvers and stuff and how stick heavy it is. See, most games, you know, they're button heavy. This is extremely stick heavy. And so one, you know, it's going to market, you know, companies are going to love this because it's going to be a controller seller. A lot of their players are getting blisters. I know Bast, he talked again. I know I'm talking a lot about him, but he's an awesome Twitch streamer, and he's even got some singing videos coming up on YouTube that are pretty comical. But he got a blister on his thumb during the beta. And so he was like nursing it because he knew he was going to pick this up and play it, when it came out. But they're going to have to maybe try to figure out something to try to alleviate some of that stick play to help people, or make a controller that allows you to use your palms or something for moving around.
The thing that this game has is the availability, like Overwatch, to play different characters and to have to learn their different styles of play, which is really, really nice. The thing that the game doesn't have, and from what I'm gathering, is a lot of different modes. So you're going to have to keep a community interested. So if they're going to keep this up for esports, they're going to add things like Overwatch did in either seasons or whatever in order to keep that community coming back.
Okay. The difference between Overwatch and this is that, yes, there is very simplistic game modes, but the character play for Overwatch is stupid simple.
It is.
In comparison to this. That's where the biggest difference. And so I can't even... I love Overwatch. I, I love the game completely. I could not get into For Honor at all because of all the controls, and you have to hit this button at this time, and this button, then this button, then this button. But if you don't push back fast enough, you just totally screwed up your entire combo, and you're dead.
Yeah, and your HUD is a mess. You have so much stuff going on in your HUD with everything horrible going on, with your radar, with the combat. You're noticing how he's blocking and not, that everything around it. It is a nightmare to try to get all that information to your brain, process it, and spit it out.
As a developer, though, you have to cater to your audience. So if you're going filthy casual, that's where Overwatch is great, because you can hop in, hop out, and it's not very complicated to hop in. They're going for a specific market here with this game, and it might not hit the casual fan, and so they're going to need to push this esports thing if they want this game to have longevity. Otherwise, it'll die out really quickly.
Right.
So listen, sticking with Ubisoft, what they got coming out that's more for the casual person that allowed them to play and just explore a game is Wildlands. And so they're kind of maneuvering it in a little bit more. They're calling it a beta. This is not a beta. This is going to be a stress test. They have an open beta coming out for February 23rd through February 27th. So they're really going to stress the servers to make sure that they got this thing ready to go. The other thing they did is they gave us the division treatment. They went in and they filmed a short, like a film short, that's actually right now it is live. It's a live action promotional film, just like the Division had, and it's on Amazon. It's called The War Within the Cartel. Shout out to Abstracticus. Yeah, we saw your comment on TI being in this as one of the cartel members.
Yeah, so right after I finished Dishonored 2, went into For Honor beta, was completely underwhelmed. And then I was like, all right, I'm so excited about RPGs. I was watching the Horizon Zero Dawn trailer. I was like, okay, I need to get me some action RPG. I haven't played The Witcher DLC yet. I haven't even bought it yet. Bought both of them, started getting into it. I'm like, oh, the love of that game is so, like, I'm barely into the first DLC right now. Barely in. I'm over halfway done the first DLC now. It's really good. And I'm not even to the second one yet. Blood and Wine. And that one is on some people's top games list. That DLC was on top 10 games list last year when it came out. And it's so strong. It's ridiculous. This game is great.
Yeah. So possibly poor word choice when referring to The Witcher 3 and talking about the love is so strong. I mean, would this have to do with this big giant stuffed unicorn?
No. Nothing unicorn, nothing stuffed. No brony going on here. Just nothing but magic and murder. And getting them beasts, and there's a lot of new awesome beasts. Just lots of love for this game. Unexcited in the pants. All mental and thumb skill love. Okay.
The Witcher is one of those games that I absolutely love, but it's so much that it's just not enough time in the day to play other things. If these were segmented, if The Witcher had segmented DLCs, and you had 10 to 20 hour segments, which would complete a small story. If they were able to do that over like maybe five, I think for me that would work out for me. But it's so overwhelming. And I played it on PC, and I got about halfway through, and there's just not enough time for me to finish.
Because the map is so big as well. Because you all of a sudden you open up the map, and it's just like, look at all these freaking question marks. Look at all this territory.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to cover all this stuff? And you know that because the story continues on and on. The main storyline is really long, really good, but really long. You're talking over 100 hours to get through it. If you're doing enough side quests and stuff to level up, if you're just blasting through it, I don't know how fast that would be. It could be pretty quick, but you'd be under level for a lot of the later fights.
For my play style, I would rather play through three games over that period of time than play to. But I got enough of an idea of what The Witcher was, and I appreciate it for what it was that I can speak to it, but it was just way too much for me.
Yeah, like it's a game I wouldn't go play through again because it's so freaking long, but it's just the graphic style story, there is nothing wrong with this game. I would like the action, the fighting to be a little better, but it's not bad. But this game is, yeah, it's the reason why it's on so many people's top list.
It's definitely above and beyond The Witcher 2, because The Witcher 2, the game played a lot faster. Witcher 2 was difficult.
Short. Witcher 2 super short compared to this one. Witcher 2, I think, was just testing the engine. Yeah.
It must have been but even the play style for it, the dodging and the parrying and the moving around in The Witcher 2 was much more clunky than 3. 3 right. is, I mean, they ironed out everything.
Oh, yeah. It was so much better at fighting. I think they gave you a little more time in your wheel as well, mm-hmm. and allowed you to go and put oils and stuff on your swords and stuff. Do a lot of stuff in menu without time affecting those decisions as well. Because sometimes I would start a fight and something attacking me. I'd roll out of the way and I'd look like, that's a necrophage. Let's put necrophage oil on and let's do this.
The thing that I liked about the Witcher 3, though, is you were able to get into the story quicker. Witcher 2 kind of dragged that out for a good 45 minutes to an hour, and it felt like that. In Witcher 3, it didn't feel like that. Even though they were doing it, the story was told in a way that it didn't feel like you were going through the testing phase.
Yeah, and it didn't also, it let you know right away you're playing a rated MA game, which the next game Damien's going to talk about is, because The Witcher started off, it's full nude, you just finished hooking up, everybody's nude in the room, you're like, what game is this? It's The Witcher 3, but in Damien's game that he's talking about next, there's some nudity, and like we talked about last couple of episodes, Wang Bar.
Oh, man.
Fouts can attest to the Wang Bar and the damage that it does.
No, I cannot attest to your Wang Bar.
I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
No, mine's definitely bigger. Hashtag tripod. I've been getting dick pics all week from Damien playing this game. Just putting that out there.
There was a word Fouts just used. Definitely. Mine is definitely bigger. That requires some sort of physical fact proof. I'd rather talk about the game, but there was a word definitely used there that makes me question your friendship.
Picker didn't happen.
Now Chris wants a pick. I don't know, man.
Chris is asking for picks.
I'm not the one shooting dick pics out here, dudes. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not either.
So to put a visual cue in this audio podcast, in our Discord, Damien has sent dick pics, but of his character in Conan, to show what his character's junk.
What he's working with? Yeah.
So I picked up a game that's like been on the top tier of streaming, which is Conan Exiles. Now, this game does everything that... So you got games like Ark, Rust, these survival games that were good. Okay, and they got better over time. They're still getting better over time. But then Conan comes in. They're just like, hey, I'm going to take what you guys did, and I'm going to turn it up a notch, and we're going to give more freedom to you. We're going to give more freedom to the players. So I play on quite a few servers. This is one of the cons of it, is that the servers aren't always up, or they don't come up in the search bar all the time. So I play on multiple servers. Now, one of the servers I play on is a roleplay server, and everything's like sped up. They just redid a wipe and everything got sped up, so you can build things much faster, right? So I'm getting a better feel for the game and everything, so I'm starting to understand a little more. I've been watching a lot of the stuff that goes on it. The graphics in this game, and I know games, it's not always about graphics, but and in survival games, oftentimes the graphics are what take a hit. They do not take a hit in this game. As Wang Bar aside, the graphics are really, really well done, just looking at the scenery and whatnot. God, this all sounds bad. But
this takes Ubisoft's character creation to a whole new level.
Yeah, like there's some games where you can pick out a lot of stuff, and it's just like, at one point, because there's always the dude who's high. I was like, oh man, it'd be great if we could like pick the actual anatomy and make that right. People are like, yeah, they'll never do that. And somebody was like, hey, let's actually do that.
And the thing that people have to realize, though, is when you wipe a server, man, you're wiping an entire character, correct? So you're losing everything.
See, that's the thing. they allow you to say, hey, I want to change the settings on this. And so characters are saved on the server. Now the buildings, they can choose to, just to wipe certain things. They chose to wipe the buildings out, but anything on your character stays. And so I was confused because I logged in and I'm like, wait a second, my character's here. Where's my building I just built? However, because they increased the speed of being able to obtain items and stuff, I already have myself a nice house and everything built up, and I'm leveling up so much faster that I'm getting to other aspects of the game, and pretty soon it'll be ready for me to start hunting other players. However, it's a strictly enforced roleplay server, so I have to say, come here, sir, you know, whatever. I'm going to have to be speaking like I'm Conan. I might have to talk with Young Khan and do some research on what I need to be saying.
Is this beta?
This is early access. You can pick it up on Steam. It is actually the number one selling game on Steam right now. It's $29.99 for the standard edition, or you can get a barbarian edition for $60. Which I didn't look to see what comes in the Barbarian Edition. Now it will be coming to console here. It'll be on Xbox Early Access here in the spring. I will be picking it up on console as well. I'm still not sure where. The reason why I want it on PC is because the way that the developer has this, where people can make mods, they're going to allow you to make mods in this game, and they're targeting to be able to do that on console as well. And so you'll be able to put in your own characters. Like if you want to create creatures, you're going to be able to mod that and put this into this game and load them onto your server. But you'll actually be able to create basically your own game within the engine here. And so I foresee this going kind of the route of like DayZ from the ARMA games.
The thing of it is these type of games are bent towards PC rather than console. So when you were talking about this game, this sounds to me more like a PC game than I would want to play on a console. Just seeing DayZ is that type of game. As you can see, it never made it to console. The way the game has to change consistently is too much for console and much easier to do on PC.
Yeah, that's why that kind of directed me towards PC. That and the fact that this is where the streamers are. In fact, I'm playing on the Angry Joe Show, or the Angry Joe Show Army, his server. I'm playing on that as one of the servers I'm leveling up a character on. Yeah. But I guess now would be heading into the hype train.
All right, so we're going to talk about X-Men Supernova, and we had a casting, or at least a reprisal of a role, correct?
Correct.
And so the thought process is this is going to be based on the Dark Phoenix saga, which if you watched any of the X-Men cartoons, did this pretty well. Like, yeah, it was really, it was done really, really well. At least the ones that I watched back, you know, in my
Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. That's why I'm hoping that they follow through with that storyline. Cause that storyline was, you know, I remember, you know, the problem is you had to wait each week, and then sometimes they'd throw in a rerun in the middle of it. You're like, what is this? No.
Now, if they're going to do that Phoenix Saga, didn't they already do this previously? Wasn't there a Phoenix Saga done? Yeah, right?
They touched on it, but they didn't really go into the saga. They just showed where Jean Grey was becoming the Phoenix and whatnot, but they never actually went into the actual saga or that storyline.
Because that's when Jackman's skin was, like, coming off of his body, right, and he was trying
and
to
when
reach
Jean
for...
killed,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah. So this could be a possible reboot, then, of the series? I mean,
correct,
they could be going a whole different direction. Maybe not recasting everybody, but for sure an awesome possibility for a brand new Wolverine to come into play.
Also, at the end of Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse, they threw teasers towards this series because they showed Turner's character Jean Grey becoming the Phoenix and having that power.
Right.
So that's where this is all coming from.
Yeah, because it's always like her power has been withheld through whatever other force ever they tried to come in the comic through Professor X putting a shield on her, to just her not knowing her full potential yet. But then once it's revealed, she can't put a cap on it. Like, she struggles to put a cap on it after that. So this would definitely take her down that route. But I was kind of a little bit with Chris. I really thought that this was going to be, I really thought the Phoenix Saga was done in the X-Men 3 movie. But if they feel they really want to do a full treatment of this in maybe multiple movies, because they can really go deep with this and even go to space.
That's what I was going to say.
Space, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, now the problem is if I'm not mistaken in that storyline, I mean, granted, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in space. I mean, like, back when Magneto went to space and all that stuff. However, I thought that Guardians of the Galaxy played into that, if I remember correctly. I might be overstepping my geek nerd card here, but I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. The problem is now, as you get older, the memory all goes to that Saturday morning cartoon. So I'm actually seeing those cartoon images in my face.
Exactly. I see those all the time as well. But yeah, that's the problem with having the characters in different universes. Marvel can't divvy them out. So we're not going to be able to see that crossover unless there's some significant financial or back studio deal compensation done to make Guardians appear in in Space Phoenix Saga.
Hey, go ahead.
I was going to say, what they need to do is make sure that they retell this story in a way that is unique compared to the X-Men 3, because if all we're doing is retelling the same exact story again, nobody's going to want to go see it. Or I wouldn't. I mean, I've already seen that story.
Yeah.
Show me something different. Get it more in detail. Tell me why I should be caring about this character. And if we are restarting the series, then there's the reason why. Hey, this is going to be the jumping point from now on for X-Men. Okay, now I understand why I need to see it.
As long as they don't have the scene, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch," I'm all good.
Oh, dude, come on. That is a classic line.
That is a classic. It is. I know.
Has been pulled.
That is not pulled. That is a. Oh, come on.
Yeah, but no matter what anybody says about even the direction, even some of the stuff in X-Men 3, it was a deep emotional plot on that one. She kills Scott. She kills Professor X. Like, Wolverine has to nearly sacrifice his life to kill her. And he has to kill her in that one. She is threatening the world. Like, everybody is, like, trying to stop. It is such a emotional plot with lots of big, big scenes happening in X-Men 3 that you're really going to have to, if you want to tell this story, you have to go even bigger, because if you take the Phoenix Saga and go smaller, it will constantly compare it to X-Men 3, which was the weakest of the first trilogy. And if you end up with that comparison, you're going to die at the box office, you're not going to last. So they have to go bigger. And how do you think bigger in this one is completely up to the writers at this point, but they have to. So.
Yeah, not emotionally connected to a lot of X-Men characters in general, because that's not the type of movie that it is for me personally. But it took three movies with that connection between Jean and Logan, of kind of off and on type stuff where there was that tension that led to that point for that series. So to your point, I think it's going to take more than one movie. And if they're going to try to capture that in one movie, it's going to be really difficult and feel forced.
Right.
Exactly.
And Jean Grey's character in this reboot class is a minor character compared to a major one, like she was in the first trilogy. So you have to expand her even more emotion attachments. Yeah. Like you say, there's so much that needs to be done with it. I have a stronger potential now from talking about this out with you guys that this has more potential for being a flop than a success. You got to get the right writers, got to get the right directors. And right now, there's a lot of franchises that are gobbling up the right ones.
So the NAS Mini could potentially be ending production. Rumor has it that Nintendo is going to stop the production of this thing and move on to the Switch, which would make sense. Because if you have the NES Mini and you have the Switch coming out at the same time, maybe Nintendo's thought process is that they're gobbling into their own market by going after nostalgia and then a new product. Thoughts?
My thought is, from a business standpoint, if you have something that's making money in a different arena, again, like you said, nostalgia versus new. You're in two different, you're selling to two different desires right there, nostalgia gaming versus new gaming. Why pull it unless the Switch will have full backwards compatibility to play those games for free or for a significantly low package price, which is a high possibility.
So this is my thing, is if you listen to our Tinks and Remy on the My Evening Beverage, they kind of talk into another option, and this is more what I see. I see people going more the option of making themselves a little emulator that plays all the games. It's like, I understand having the nostalgia and having the controller and having all that stuff, but I mean, when you look at it, you look at the price, you look at things, if this goes away and you really want it, there are options out there to create something that'll give you, that'll allow you to play all your games.
Here's the thing, and I'm gonna curse, I still can't find one. They're nowhere. They are nowhere. I look in Target, I look in Toys R Us, I've been to Walmart, you still can't find them anyplace. So either they stop production, or they just are still so underproduced on this thing that they can't keep up with the demand, and or maybe they feel like, at this point, if we produce more, we're not going to have enough people interested. We caught a hot spurt over Christmas where it was underproduced and everybody wanted it. Now if we have it, it's just going to sit on shelves, so let's just back away and not make any more.
I think that there's two points to that. Yes, if they completely underestimate the actual demand for the product and overproduce and load it on shelves, then they could lower that desire and not get the price point. But I think what they could end up doing, ending production could be maybe a temporary end that they could end and then come out right before Christmas and say NES Mini's back, and be a 3 to 4 month Christmas cycle every year where the NES Mini is only available up to Christmas and then it's dropped every year, where they have a continuing seasonal demand for the product where they only release a certain amount, and then they can raise their price point for this and they can keep the demand going. Because if they keep running it like this, eventually they will do exactly what you said, they will overstock shelves. But if they can keep that rotating demand going every year, I think that would be the better business play on this scenario.
And Cajun, maybe to your point, what they can do in order to draw a crowd back in again is add more games on. So right. The original NES had these 30 games. Now it's got an additional 20 games. And so you can keep making that happen. Or say, now it's going to be the NES Classic / Super NES. So you'll be able to play NES games and Super Nintendo games on this machine. And there you go. So now you're going to sell more of those. So you can draw demand in a couple of different ways.
Yep. The only thing is, if they did another NES that had those games built in, they'd have a lot of the original buyers bitching, wanting to get those games, so they would need to have some way to be able to load them into the newer system, the older system.
I don't think it would bother all five people that actually own one right now.
Who actually were able to get one.
So I think they'd be okay.
Yeah.
So the Batflick saga continues, where now Mr. Batflick, this is a rumor, potentially does not want to do Batman any longer. Oh my, this thing is a train wreck. Right. Literally, it's off the rails at this point, and it's fun to just watch and see where this is going.
One of the things that I think is funny about it is that, you know, his co-star from Justice League, Jason Momoa, is totally just saying, it's like, hey, you know what? Forget about this. I'm going to run the show. I'll be the guy. I'll be the Wolverine of the DC Universe. And the thing is the more I see about that, I'm like, just go. It's like, okay, if Batman wants to back out, send it over to Momoa.
So what I
Momoa's not a big name. So for him to say that, it's because, like, I think it's because the guy feels like maybe I'm not going to grab another thing. So like, so being you know, Aquaman is his thing. It could be the Logan thing. You know what I mean? Because Hugh Jackman wasn't a big name until he took Wolverine on.
I mean, and already right now with what people are viewing the whole Aquaman film right now, it's like they're pushing. I feel like marketing's pushing towards him being the figurehead now, which is interesting, stepping aside from Superman and Batman.
Yeah, I don't know if there's enough evidence besides these guys talking and this is being a rumor. I mean, Affleck could come out tomorrow and say, I'm really in, guys. This one just came out of nowhere. a lot of these Hollywood rumors are based in reality, which we have seen with him walking away from the set, those words from his mouth. But we don't have any quotes from him on this. It is likelihood it could happen because my thought is the likelihood of him stepping down stems from one thing. He wants to do other movies besides Batman. And if any time he does any movie besides Batman and he's still listed as the Batman for future content coming out, he's going to have exactly what happened to him with Live by Night. They're only going to want to talk about Batman. That's the only thing they're going to post in the article. They're not going to talk about his movie, and it's going to flop, whether the movie's good or not. I have no clue if Live by Night is actually good or not. But all the talk leading up to it was about him playing Batman. Nothing was about the quality of the movie compared to his other movies, where all the talk was the quality of the movie. And if he wants to get back to making good quality Oscar-worthy movies, then he would need to step away from a role that's so polarizing as this and a universe that's so polarizing as this, because it's not like Marvel where everything's a hit. DC is struggling to find a good quality movie. And when you put so much in that big character, it's a lot of weight to bear, and it could make his other projects continue to suffer.
He's also contractually obligated. He's not going to say anything. It's in his best interest to stay quiet through Justice League and through at least the other Batman movie that he's required to do, and then open up his mouth and say something, right? Because it's going to hurt the studio and in turn hurt him. So it's in his best interest to stay quiet on that front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't want to pull an Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movie, you know, with Sony.
He doesn't want to.
And
yeah. He has enough street cred to get to other places, but he doesn't want to. Yeah, that's a big money thing, and you piss off some big money people if you affect a franchise like this.
So. Yeah, it'd be Warner Brothers in general. You'd have all the studios that they're involved with. You don't want to make Warner Brothers. No. You don't want to make Universal. You don't want to make Disney. You don't want to make Warner Brothers angry. And those are like the three figureheads of film. So,
and especially being a producer and being a director, you could easily piss enough people off to get yourself blackballed and pigeonhole yourself in an area that you don't want to be in, and he'll be back to the Goodwill Hunting. I've got to try to crowdsource fund whatever film or project that I want to do. The other thing that I was going to mention too was in this process, what Cajun had mentioned is when these guys, girls do these characters, especially polarizing characters in Marvel or in DC, if you notice the other films that they do, they just don't do as well, because people I associate, you know, watching these characters now, Hemsworth, and watching Evans, and that's who they are. Mm-hmm. So when they try to be somebody else, it's like, well, that's Captain America. Well, okay, well, that's Thor. It becomes very difficult. It's really difficult. Even Downey Jr. has had a difficult time moving away from Tony Stark. It's a difficult thing, and so that's why you see them coming back. Another movie, because if they can get a payday out of those, why not?
So Chris Pratt, he did Guardians of the Galaxy, one movie, and immediately afterwards he did Passengers. Passengers, if you look at it just from the movie itself, it's a fairly decent movie, but his character sucks because I'm used to seeing him as Star-Lord.
No, he did Jurassic Park right after.
Yeah, he did great in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. But he that was a big franchise thing. People were going to see...
Right.
A big franchise name like Scarlett Johansson and Ghost in the Shell. They're not going to think about her as an Avenger in that one, because Ghost in the Shell is a giant franchise title. I think they're going to think of her less than it. And also trust in her action sequences being strong because of her Marvel status.
Yeah. But the problem is she's doing Ghost in the Shell, and what questions does she get asked? When are you going to be doing a Black Widow solo film? When are you going to be doing a Black Widow solo film?
True.
Even in that, she's still getting asked that question, so she cannot get away from it.
She got asked those when she did Lucy. I mean, it's totally. But you know, the thing is Scarlett Johansson, she is kind of taking up. She's going up the same route that Mila Jovovich has. You know, now with her, Mila Jovovich has. She's done other films, but let's see. What do people know her in? They know her as either The Fifth Element, which is one film, or they know her for Resident Evil, which they're already starting the reboot. Yep. So,
which comes to the point of when you step away, then you get to do other films and talk about other films and promote them properly. But at the same time, these sequels, these series are what make a lot of money. And as an artist, yeah, you can go step aside, do other things, and feel more accomplished in your craft. But in terms of the financial stability of a guaranteed $20 million or whatever paycheck, these big box office sequels that your name's attached to, or where are you going to get those from? The new one that has a $15 million budget is not going to pay you $20 million on a $15 million budget. So
no,
you're SOL there. So there's a lot of business that goes into it. But when you combine business with artisanship, what these actors and actresses have to do, that's when you run all into these scenarios right here, and also public desire to have these strong and popular characters continue on.
The fact that Suicide Squad is even considering a sequel after its atrocious Rotten Tomatoes score, and also critical, just getting kind of blasted, pulling at straws or some desperation and trying to get Mel Gibson as a director. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Thoroughly surprised. More with Suicide Squad 2 than Mel Gibson. Like, his personal... Hollywood can forget a lot. Like, Hollywood forgets and forgives a lot of people's past. So that, putting that aside, he has been a solid director in many projects. So he would be a get as a quality filmmaker to make Suicide Squad better, I think.
Is Will Smith contractually obligated to a sequel? Because if not, getting him to be in this film would be very difficult. If he's not obligated, I would see him distancing himself from this and saying, no thanks, you know, I already did that, don't want to go back.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it would be kind of difficult. I know that obviously they want Robbie back because, and I know that she's contractually obligated, I think, to 4 films. I want to say it's 4, but I'd have to look it up.
Right, and that's also the solo film for her and then the Bad Girls Club.
Mm-hmm. So for her to be back is okay. Will they bring Joker back? Are they going to recast? Is it going to be Leto still? I know that we had the Twitter picks we talked about. Yeah, we talked about the Twitter picks and him showing the Joker stuff again, kind of leading into maybe he's going to replay that character. We shall see. I just thought it was interesting that Mel Gibson was brought up as the director. And for Suicide Squad, it can't do anything but at least draw somebody's attention to it, you know, so people will talk about it again for a movie that really wasn't highly praised.
Right.
The next thing that we have coming up is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild getting DLC. The first, I would say it's the first time Nintendo's putting in DLC, but that's not really true because there were added characters into Mario Kart, which could be purchased. So it's not that Nintendo's not used to doing this, they're just not used to doing it in the traditional sense of producing content that's extended content after, you know, they've completed a project.
Right. And I think this has to go with the scale of Zelda. Like, when their initial reports are coming out with completion of saying they're going to finish it in 24 hours, and the guys are saying, you're not going to be able to finish this in a week. Like, the scale of this the scale of the Zelda game starts getting bigger and bigger. I've seen graphics showing, like, how big Breath of the Wild's world is versus other Zelda games' worlds and other games in general. It's just like, it's an incredibly large world that's going to have long content. Chris was saying how Witcher was almost impossible to finish. And I think from just the verbals, what we're hearing from Nintendo, I think Breath of the Wild could be equal, if not more, in terms of how much content and how long it's going to take to finish. So I think they just got so deep into getting this game out March 3rd that they had a few projects on the back burner. Like, man, if we can just put this as DLC, turn this story into DLC, turn this into DLC story instead of putting it in game so we can get this game out, because we have just way too much content here, and then fill in the gaps later. Damien?
Listen, I can't tell you how many times I've replayed my Zelda games, like especially Zelda Link to the Past. So if you can give me a Zelda game that is that large and I can just go through and keep playing it almost like an MMO, I'm all in. That is a system seller to me. Like, if they come in and tell me that I'm going to spend X amount of time, I can go and I can just pick it up and I can play it. You know, wife's watching her HGTV, I'm playing Breath of the Wild. That to me, that is what's going to get me to jump on and buy a Switch. That would be so big for me.
There's a couple of things, though, that Nintendo is kind of sketchy for me. One, you're hiding hard mode behind a paywall, which I think is kind of crap.
Wait,
like,
what?
The hard mode for this game is part of the DLC. So they're hiding it behind a paywall. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
That's...
Hard mode. Yeah. And the other thing is, this is coming out in waves. A lot of distributors, when you're doing DLC, you can purchase the DLC packs. You have to purchase this as a whole. So you cannot separate this up. So if you only want hard mode and you don't really care about the extra, you know, caverns or story mode, TS, you have to purchase it all or you don't get it. So people who want to play this game for replay value and they want to crank up the level of difficulty have to pay in order to make that happen. And I don't know what Nintendo is going to charge for this. So it also lends itself to how long is this going to be? Is it going to be like your Witcher DLC and we're talking about an extension of 10 to 20 hours? Or is this something that you're basically paying for hard mode and maybe a 4 to 5 hour extension of gameplay?
Those are significant business decisions for them that I just don't see working out, because gamers can boycott like a mother. We have way too many options out there that if you wrong us the wrong way as a community and people are just like, I just want hard mode and you're going to let me pay hard mode? Well, screw you. I'm going to pack up my things and go. So, yeah, that's some sketchy stuff, Brandon.
The biggest problem I have with them doing DLC is I don't know how they're going to do it, because there's no storage on the Switch. Especially for a DLC of any type, really. And especially if you start getting game updates and everything else, if you have any digital games, it's going to take up the very minimal space that you have, because I believe there's only 32 gigs. So if you do get any digital game, it's going to eat up all your space. And I think that the expandable storage is, what, up to 32, 64 gig?
Brandon, you know how they're going to do this? It's already in the game. It's just an unlock.
Okay.
So you're not going to be downloading anything extra. You're only going to be unlocking things that are already within the game.
It'll be a patch to unlock
it. It'll be a patch to unlock it.
It'll be the same. You're right. It'll probably be the same maps, just traversing them. Like, it was like what Bungie does with a lot of their stuff. Here's a new mission, but it's not a new map. It's just taking this, turning this way, and you're running a route this way in the map, and this is your new mission with new enemies in this new setup.
What I hope they don't do is open up a cave door that wasn't opened if you didn't pay for it, and all of a sudden now it has a hole in it that you can walk into. So people who haven't paid for it are losing out on a lot of things that the people who are choosing to pay for the DLC are gaining. That's the sketchy part, because you'll be splintering a community.
Well,
especially for Zelda.
I think that's always going to be the case, as long as it's, I mean, because you're not competing with other people, you're not going to have a PvP aspect to it, so it's not going to be pay to win. So there's always going to be that, oh, you get this awesome new weapon at level 34 and I'm still 32. Well, yeah, that's the DLC side of everything. You pay for the DLC, you get to go up to two more levels. If you don't, you get to play back here, deal with it. That's gaming life, I think. I think there's a story on that side that's tellable.
So have you guys got a chance to see the house trailer?
Like Dr. House?
No, like it's a new trailer that has Will Ferrell in it. And Amy, have you guys seen it yet?
I have not.
Amy Poehler? Yeah. It's really, really fun. It's really, really funny.
I've seen it, yes.
It's about a husband and a wife
I've seen
whose daughter gets into a college that they can't afford. And the line that he uses where he was like, look, we have $401,000. It says we have 401k. And so it was a super funny line. And they go underground with a couple of guys, which I thought was funny, from an FX show talking about fantasy football. You know what I'm talking about, Brandon. Mm-hmm. And The League, which was a really good show. Yeah, there's a couple of guys from The League that are in it, and they
love that show.
Convert their home into a casino in order to, with gambling, including a tanning salon and a strip club upstairs, to be able to afford her 4 years in a month. And if you can imagine Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler, this thing is going to be hysterical. It's been a while since Will Ferrell's been in something that I've found really funny. And just the preview of this looks hysterical. So I have good vibes. That's all I'm going to say. The preview just came out today and posted. So If you get a chance, take a look at it. I think it's going to be one of those movies that either is going to be a great date night movie, or at the very worst, one of those really nice, you know, iTunes movies that you watch like when immediately when it comes out on video, which my wife and I tend to do on Friday or Saturday nights.
And nice. I was watching a little bit of it as y'all were talking about it just now, and it definitely has that vibe of sort of a Will Ferrell's back. Like, this is a comedy. It has a good second lead to bounce jokes off of, who's also funny as well, and a unique storyline that's not too crazy campy, where you can go off the rails. So yeah, this has some potential, and good to see him back in the saddle again.
We talked about this last week on how we thought that some of these gaming companies were going to stand on their own. We talked about Bungie specifically. Microsoft, for the E3 conference, which is typically on a Monday, and it's typically on East Coast time for me, like around, I think it's around 11:30, 12, it's like 12 o'clock East Coast time, has decided they're going to bump their E3 promo to Sunday, June 11th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Big deal. This is a very big deal.
Yeah, that's going to be right between EA and Bethesda as well. They're both on that day as well.
They're looking to own the day and the mind
share. They're going
to
own the whole
and totally blow up. Yes. But with having Scorpio, they don't want to compete with Sony, because Sony's conference is always the last of the day. So if they have to compete against Sony, it's always they get the first set. Everybody talks about them for a little bit, but then Sony comes in with all game, and then everybody talks about Sony and forgets that Microsoft had a conference. They want to own the day. Bethesda is not competition. EA is not competition. They get to show off Scorpio. They get to talk all about it, and then it's your serve, Sony. Let's see what you have. So I think this is a great idea for Microsoft, and this also sets a precedent, again, that soon we're going to have these companies only want to have their own thing, and they don't want to involve E3, and they're going to start to distance themselves away, which is already happening now.
Yep. You can reach your fan. Like, people have proven time and time again, it's people that, there's a few that don't believe it, and that's probably the only thing holding it back. You can reach your fan base however you want to. Your fans will find you. With enough marketing and media behind it, they will find you. You can reach them, and you can hype them up, and you do not have to be next to your competition while you do it and let them dog you down. So that's E3's model, and people are moving away from it.
Imagine being Microsoft on that Monday and to throw a middle finger to Sony. Hey, by the way, when your press conference is going on, we're going to let fans play with the Scorpio. We're going to have hands-on. You want to come on the floor? We're going to run it from this time to this time. Anybody who wants to come on down, make your way down, and you can have hands-on with the Scorpio. Now you want to take mindshare away from Sony?
That would be.
People are going to come down.
Awesome.
Do you know what I'm saying? So they could do it
just that time and open extras, like have a lot more.
And do it outside like they did for the Xbox Play Anywhere that they do typically. They do a fan one at E3, mm-hmm. Have it outside. They have their own space. We're running out, blah, blah, blah. And anybody who wants to come down can come play. You're going to take it away from everybody, because they're going to see it, and they're going to see it in 4K. You guys can see it on 4K, you know, today, and you can play it tomorrow in blah, 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 blah. You know, get your hands on it.
And this is where they're by Microsoft. This is where they're going to shine. This is where they are going to say, you may have had the start, but we're going to get you in the finish.
Right. Scorpio, I think, is going to put them in a really, really, really good spot to do that. And I have high expectations for Microsoft at this conference, and I can't wait to see it. I mean, why is it so far away, Brandon?
Well, see, Microsoft was doing this to Sony when they did their PS4 Pro reveal. Because if you were on Twitter, you've seen everybody from Xbox tweeting out that the Sony press conference for the PS4 Pro was a joke. And they were just tweeting it up, and they started making memes about it from Xbox, promoting the Xbox One S, saying all the things that it could already do that the PS4 Pro would not be able to do.
So it should definitely be interesting. I just thought it was a smart marketing move from Microsoft, and also smart for them to jump on it now. And they had it all over Twitter, and they had all of their major heads. So Josh Stein, and they had Major Nelson, And they just, Aaron Greenberg, everybody was tweeting this out. So it's a big deal. They want to make sure that everybody knows it. And they all posted that sign of that chip.
The Scorpio chip.
You know what I mean? That Microsoft, that Scorpio chip that everybody has been talking about. And if you saw the Twitter pics today with XB3, he had it on. Like, he had the hoodie on that said Scorpio. So they're really promoting it. Everywhere they go, they want to talk about Scorpio, Scorpio, Scorpio. And they're slowly moving away from Xbox One in the sense that this is what they want as the mindshare now. They want Scorpio to be in the verbiage that everybody talks about.
Listen, I hope that they actually – I like the name Scorpio. I hope they actually stick with it. I don't want – you know, I don't want them to switch away and have it be, it's the Xbox. This. You know what? We've all adopted that name. Keep it. It's good. It's awesome. You already own it. Let's make that the name of the new console. Don't give it a new name.
And there is no naming convention. PlayStation is 1, 2, 3, 4. Xbox is Xbox, then 360, then 1. You can go Scorpio next. You do not have a naming convention. And Nintendo's proven you can do that as well, too. They've been all over the place with their naming convention and not a numerical naming convention that follows any pattern whatsoever. You can make it up as you go and people will be fine with it, especially if it's a name that people are liking and taking off with. If you already have merch for it, people are already buying into it, then you can go that route. But I hope is going to be the big thing is if they actually use this as a next gen system. Like, we are the only next gen system. We already know that it has the power to be that. But if they really show it as this is the next gen system, and there will be games for this system that will not be by next gen, not be available on any other system because this is the only thing that can run it, and meaning true next gen, that's their market share differential, and they're going to be ahead of the game from PlayStation if they have people making games that's only for Xbox Scorpio that they can't make for anybody else.
Having the merch that says Scorpio on it is completely different than any other generation when they talk about the naming of systems. Not a lot of companies come out with whatever their code name is on as far as swag. And so they're really coming out strong with this Scorpio thing. Cajun, to your point, the specs on Scorpio are a big deal. Mm-hmm. So if this thing is proven, the checkerboard thing is already becoming an issue. So if this isn't producing at 4K consistently at 60 frames, which is the standard, this thing is going to crumble really quickly and everybody's going to start complaining immediately. So I hope for their sake that when they say next gen, it actually has and does everything that our expectation level for this is going to be, because the hype that they're building for it is setting that expectation level. And as we know, you know, expectation level that's set for your guest, which would be us, or, you know, your audience, if you set it at the wrong level, you're setting it for a letdown, and people will just get extremely angry that they were told one thing and then given another.
Yep. And I feel that the graphics stuff could get a little leeway if game developers really like the hardware enough to design just for that system, to build the game they want to build, that one game they wanted to build just for that system, to make it a next gen only or an exclusive for it, to give it that advantage. Because I mean, I rewatched the Breath of the Wild trailer recently and rewatched Horizon Zero Dawn, and those two sitting side by side, as if you call them action RPGs, if you go both, it's the graphics fidelity is it's a toy. Zelda is a toy compared to games like Witcher and Horizon Zero Dawn in terms of RPGs. It's not even close. But if the gameplay is good and people are making good games for it, it doesn't. The graphics don't matter. Yeah.
You can see the ants crawling on the blades of grass in Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah,
that's the graphical fidelity that it goes down to. When I watch that video, I like, oh, I cannot wait for that game because I just the gameplay alone. And the Witcher style.
Yeah.
But we're kind of getting off topic. I know, Damon, you wanted to talk a little bit about Star Wars.
Yeah, so we've all been curious what direction they're going to go after Episode 8, how we're going to see things going. We do know that Hayden Christensen has been on set, you know, when they were filming Episode 8. Now, this is something, you know, they're actually, they said, you know, initially that, yes, Hayden Christensen is our Vader, is our Anakin. they're wanting to sell that. They're now looking. The rumor is, and it's a strong rumor coming out, is that Hayden Christensen is going to take on the mentor role for Kylo Ren, as in he will be a Force ghost that will be the mentor role that originally it would have been played more than likely by his mother. And so being the fact that, so there will be a Force ghost. Now, the other thing with this is if they did this, there could be two sides to this because, in storyline and canon and everything, they've had it to where the dark side and the light side of Darth Vader has been split. So you could have, like, you know, there's a lot of ways they could go with that. Secondly, on another topic, Thandi Newton, this is for you, Chris.
Yes.
This is, yeah. Is
hashtag
is
going to join.
Yes. it's going to join the Star Wars universe in the Han Solo standalone film.
Just goes to show that, you know, one acting job takes you into another acting job. So this is not by happenstance. She doesn't do Westworld. She doesn't get this Solo movie. It's just as simple as that.
So you know that some of these movies, like, they'll have a clip card title, like a little clipboard that they use. It's normally a fake title, so people taking pictures don't get it. Do y'all know what the title for this one is?
Red Cup.
Because of the Solo Cup. All right, everybody knew what that was. Now our fans know too, man. When I heard that, that was freaking great. I was like, these writers know what's up. Like, the people making this one, they have the right sense of humor for this, and I think this needs it. It needs some levity. It can't be too serious because it is a Han Solo movie. You need to have some fun with it, and I think they're ready to go.
I think that Hayden Christensen idea is a really good idea because you're able to force ghost somebody back into it with, so the reshoots make it a little bit easier. You know what I mean? So with obviously Carrie Fisher's passing, they have to revamp this because they're thinking three episodes ahead, you know, and to be able to use Hayden Christensen is a smart move. It resurrects a career of a guy who is completely gone off the face of the earth. And it also ties the grandfather whom he's so obsessed with back into the movie, and it'll blink last episode into this episode into the next episode, and maybe he takes that same story arc of Vader, who was a bad guy and was good, is bad, and then converts back to good again.
Which goes into the theory we were talking about, who's the last Jedi, with the red graphics in the background. There's theories on who it was. I'm still sticking with it being Kylo Ren being the last Jedi, and I think this solidifies it even more. If Hayden Christensen's the mentor, Darth Vader came around to the light at the end, and if he becomes the mentor, then you have a light, a good-sided mentor to mentor Kylo Ren, to pull him, and it's a mentor that can bypass any security system. So if he's getting messages,
very true,
where everything's around, but he's getting messages going to him that's turning him good, and you don't have to like sneak somebody in to like turn him to that side, then it could be a longer process leading to it instead of like, wow, that was pretty quick and with no buildup whatsoever. This could actually lead through the whole thing and possibly be better executed.
Toy packaging has a first look at Rey, Finn, and Poe. And you can see where Rey's hair is now down. And she's also wearing the black stitching that's going across with the blue saber. So, leading you to believe, obviously, that she's going to be trained. Not that we didn't know this, by Luke Skywalker mm-hmm. at some point. Poe's still wearing the jacket. Or Finn, pardon me, still wearing that leather jacket. Which, he has that low-cut V shirt. Almost like the Han Solo look. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is what I, the kind of feel that I got. And then just, you know, Poe doing what Poe does in the X-Wing.
Yeah.
Hashtag that Finn is actually Han Solo's son.
Yes.
Whoa. That'll be a plot twist.
It'll be a plot twist, especially
it's canon.
When they connect
it's
it.
Canon.
It is. And they'll connect it through that Han Solo movie before he meets Leia. If they're bringing in these characters, what if Thandi is Poe's, or is the mom?
He has an older mom. He has an older.
Yeah. No, but what I'm saying is
what if Thandi Newton is Newton Poe, is
Finn's
Finn.
Mom? Yeah, is Finn's mom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then that's how you're able to bring it back, because the difference in age, I don't know, though.
I know it's in a galaxy far, far away, but mm-hmm. like there's some the God. There's this is gonna come up back. The color mixing doesn't fit. Finn is significantly darker. I'm sorry.
Yes.
It doesn't
I was thinking
fit.
More of
it
an
is
age
a galaxy
thing.
Far away, there is aliens.
Yeah.
You can
there's also a huge age difference, because in the last movie he's what, maybe 26, 27 years old. That would be a huge difference. I mean, if you're looking at Han Solo in the current movie, he's got to be in his mid even in Star Wars terms, he's in his 60s, right?
Brandon?
I was going to say Kylo and Finn look about the same age. So I think it's theoretically possible.
Okay.
It would make sense if they were trying to connect the two series together. You know what I mean? If they were trying to make a connection, because the last episode that they just did obviously connected back to Leia and whatnot. So maybe this connects back to Solo, and then the next one connects back to another major character, and that way it ties the whole world together.
Yeah, I just think Finn's a stretch. He's such a random character to be pulled out. That it's like, oh yeah, Force ghosts, Force pulled him. The exact one out and made this work. I don't know. I think it's a stretch.
It's Star Wars. It can happen.
Oh, yeah. What happened here? Space magic. Oh, yeah, no, sorry. We call it the Force. What happened here? Force. Yeah. Man. It's a great magic. MacGuffin. Oh, and going back, or we can talk about it more next week. In the Lego Batman movie, the plane at the beginning is MacGuffin Airlines.
Nice.
Which is exactly what it is.
So we're all excited about going to see Beauty and the Beast live action. At least I know I am. We talked about it. I think a group of us were pretty excited about it. Disney now in just the live action mode of any classic cartoon that they had come out in the 90s and on. So Mulan is going to get a live action. To me, Mulan seems logical.
Exactly.
It would be a movie that I would go, oh yeah, that would be a live action movie.
Sure.
I could see that happening.
Yeah.
More so than like an Aladdin,
no, I could
or
see Aladdin.
A Little Mermaid or anything
right.
like that. But
Mermaid,
Mulan specifically, because of the storyline, seems like something to me that would make sense.
You want those epic battle sequences play out a lot better in live action. Because they've done Cinderella, they've done Jungle Book, then Beauty and the Beast. Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast, very dramatic romance
King?
Ones. Jungle Book, very action, very animal oriented. Lion King is going to be very animal oriented. Mulan, I think, is going to be quite possibly the best one of it for exactly what Chris said. It just will translate better on the screen for live action. I think they picked it right. And I would not be surprised if they do it with every single one of them. But Little Mermaid probably being the most difficult. How the hell are they going to film live action underwater?
Aquaman?
As much as they do. Huh?
Listen, so what's going to happen is we already know that we're going to go see, we'll see Matt Damon's The Wall, and then the lone surviving dragon is going to appear in Mulan.
As Mushu.
You can go see Matt Damon's The Wall.
Oh, I will. I'm going to.
I'll see it.
What it appears... What it looks like to me is Disney distancing themselves a little bit farther away from the cartoons and more towards the live action. I mean, we know that Moana did very well. However, it's the first one that they've come out with in a bit that has had that success. And so if they're seeing more returns on the live action stuff and they're able to regurgitate basically used product without having to come up with a new storyline, they're only just kind of curtailing a lot of the verbiage that's used in these movies, but it's most of it's the same from what I've read, then this makes the most sense for Disney.
They also have Cars 3 coming out. They also have Incredibles 2.
But that's basing themselves off Pixar versus off of Disney, where Disney's not creating those cartoons. They're relying more on Pixar to do that version of their cartoon area, and the live-action stuff is the area which they're going at. And maybe they just don't want to cross the streams with Pixar. You know what I mean? People are more interested in Pixar films. So Disney movies, it takes a lot for them to hit. And usually when they do hit, it's a sleeper. Like Moana was one of those things where it was like people talked about it a little bit, but and then it really stuck with people. It also helped that Dwayne Johnson was in it, because Dwayne Johnson is a big movie pusher, especially on social media. He was pushing the hell out of that movie.
And it was unique. It was good. It helps out by making a uniquely good movie that people, and the timing where it comes out was like, you're coming out right after Star Wars, and it was coming out right in the holiday time frame where you're giving a wholesome family movie during a time where families are going around looking for wholesome family movies.
So Apple's actually looking into getting into producing and making their own TV shows. As if they didn't have enough money in their back pocket and greed, they're trying to get into TV shows. The first one's going to be a carpool karaoke show, which is going to be a spinoff version of the popular segment on James Corden's Late Late Show. And the second show is going to be a show called Planet of the Apps. It's going to be a show kind of like Shark Tank, where the contestants will pitch apps and there'll be celebrity judges like Will.i.am, Jessica Alba, and many, many more.
Yeah, I saw the carpool karaoke thing on it was, I don't know what it was, maybe Facebook or something like that, and I popped it up to watch the preview for it, and Gordon's in some of them, and he's not, James Gordon isn't in some of them either, because the one that I saw, it had Alicia Keys, and she was in the car, but he wasn't in there, but then I saw one with Will Smith, and so he was like, you want to take this to another level? And Will Smith is in a helicopter, and they're singing I Believe I Can Fly and doing a helicopter karaoke. And so it was kind of – it was really, really cool. I can see where they're going with it. I don't think that skit is good for the show, but I don't know if it would make a good show. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a nice 10 minutes, but it's not a half an hour. I would get bored with it.
It's what people watch in between things or a quick thing on YouTube once a week or something like that. But having it as a continual show, a half hour show with multiple skits in there, I don't think it can contain an audience for a long time. The apps one could be good because of the success of Shark Tank. People like entrepreneurship. They like new ideas. I mean, the app generation community is ridiculous. The barrier to entry is so small that they could have some pretty interesting stuff. And it's also free promotion for all the app makers out there too. So I think that one has a lot more legs than the carpool karaoke one. But I'd like to see like actual announcement of a drama piece for them before I started taking a new production network like Apple TV or Apple TV, whatever they want to call themselves, seriously.
Yeah, it would be like taking Fallon's skit where they do the lip sync battles and making that into a regular show. Oh wait, they already do that, and it's a terrible show. It's on another channel where they do lip sync battles. So, it's a great concept. I just don't think it's going
to
make great.
Now,
television.
The only way to actually watch that first one, the carpool karaoke, is if you have an Apple Music subscription. That's the only way to watch that one.
Oh yeah, that's. I guess I won't be talking about that one on this show.
Yeah, no.
I can. My wife and I have an Apple subscription, so I'll watch it just to see what it is.
And
but
boy.
I can't imagine it being anything. Yeah,
I can't
imagine it being. I watch his stuff on YouTube. Like when it pops up in my feed, I'm like, oh, okay, there's another carpool. I'll watch that one. They are interesting and they are fun. Some of them are really, really good. The one where he had Michelle Obama on was awesome, where she was singing and knew most of the words. So that was kind of cool. But again, very short-lived. If it's longer than like 10, 15 minutes, you count me out. I don't want to watch people just sing their own tunes. There's nothing there. I'm not gaining anything new.
Yeah. Just like you have to start with the worst and go to the best. And the person who's starting off first knows they're the worst. And yeah, so you there's a lot of issues with the show like that. So yeah, I have more hope for the second one, the app show.
All right. Time to head back to the future and go to This Week in Geek.
Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
All right, so first up, February 16th, 1984, IBM introduces the IBM Portable Personal Computer. It's the first and early prototype computer that features a 4.77 megahertz Intel 8088 processor, 256 kilobytes of RAM, and a 9-inch amber monitor. Talk about high tech.
5.25 floppy?
Yeah. The thing was, and it ran on DOS 2.1. It also weighed 30 pounds and cost $2,700.
That sounds like how much an iMac costs right now. If you want an iMac, it's $2,700. February 15th, 1999, hundreds of computer owners, dominated by the Linux users, marched on Microsoft offices demanding refunds for copies of Windows that came pre-installed on their computers. The day became known as Windows Refund Day.
Yep, they bought a computer, didn't want the software on it. That was a statement right there. It's just like, look, I want the hardware. I don't want your software. I can put this free software on myself and be completely functional. And it put a lot of eyes on it. I mean, Linux is pretty much the go-to for a free platform. February 14th, Valentine's Day, 1989, the first 24 Block 12 GPS satellites was launched. Block 2 were the first modern GPS satellites that formed the modern GPS system we know today. So, man.
C'est la vie to MapQuest.
Yeah, exactly. once you can take your phone out and it does like ping, 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 it hits three satellites and knows exactly where it's at, because all you need is three and knows where it's at, you are done, son. You are done.
Do you remember back in the day using MapQuest and it had like the wrong roads? It wouldn't even tell you that the road was like not there anymore. So you'd go and you'd drive someplace. You're like, well, the road's gone. Where else am I supposed to drive?
5.3 miles, then take a right turn. There is no right turn. There's a lake.
People complain about using your phone while driving. Try looking at a map in the passenger seat while you're trying to drive. Not an easy task.
Oh, back before I had maps on my cell phone, I was actually caught in some pretty horrific traffic going from Houston to Tyler, Texas. Ooh. And I had to basically go out. I had to go from Houston all the way to south of Waco to get like a back roads highway to get to Tyler. And if you look on a map and you realize that path, how crazy I had to get to get to Tyler, because it was just absolute crazy traffic. And I ended up having to call my uncle on my cell phone, and he was taking out physical maps. And I was like, I'm coming to this exit right here. And he's like, yeah, exit there right now. And I would exit, and then he would take, and then I was like writing down the directions as I go to get me all the way back to Tyler. It took a 3-hour drive for like 6 hours.
I've actually driven that exact road. When I was stationed in Shreveport, Louisiana, we went to Tyler, Texas, and down to Houston for an anime convention.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was doing over 100 miles an hour on that highway 59 heading to Tyler.
Well, if you want to remember back, you had to go to AAA. They'd take a stamp. They'd stamp point A, they'd stamp point B, and then they'd take a red marker and just draw the line on which ways you were supposed to go, and then put little X's on it. So, I mean, I got caught one time in Syracuse, New York, heading down to Cooperstown, and MapQuest says to get on the New York State Thruway. Well, it doesn't mention that that's I-90 at any point. So we're driving forever and ever. I look at windmills on my left and my right. I'm like, how the hell do we get back to this highway? So we stop at some convenient gas station, and the guy was like, you're an idiot. It's I-90. It's right up there. We've been driving for an hour and looking for something that said New York Thruway, and nothing in the New York Thruway ever says New York Thruway. It's always I-90.
That's the brutal part of a lot of road names. Sometimes there's freaking three or four of them. That's ridiculous.
So I think we're coming to the final pit stop for this evening. Mr. Nash, where can people find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damian Nash. All one word. Also manning the Geekologist Twitter page, late nights, minus the T for character restrictions. Also, got a new article out on geekologistradio.com talking about the possibility of a Firefly Season 2. We'll probably talk about that in next week's episode.
Please, Josh Whedon, please.
Cajun, where can we find you?
For the next 4 days, you can find me in Vegas. Without you guys, I'm going to miss you guys. But on Twitter, CAUCAJUNSAINT, Caucasian Saint, all one word. Uprising Family Gaming Slack. And who hasn't gone yet? Brandon, have you gone?
Nope, I have not gone.
Go for it, man.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at @BE_FOUTZ. And I also have a game review coming out at rectifygaming.com for a game called Brutal. Should be up by the time this episode posts on Monday. So go and give that a check out.
Awesome.
You You can find me at Two Wolves, TWOWOLVZZ on Twitter. I also have written a few articles for Rectify Gaming. You can find me on their website as well. And stuff's going to start transitioning over to RQ.media soon. We're going to start having some connections between those articles. So if you're going to one site, you can connect up to the other site and vice versa, which is going to help out because that's what we're all about. We're all about promoting other people and getting everybody's stuff out. And for that, I think we are all meowed.